Public Affairs to order. It is Monday, March 19th, on a gray and beautiful day. Committee, we are going to, we have a number of SCRs, but I do want you to know we are removing SJM 8. The proponents and opponents actually came to me this morning and said they're not quite prepared. So we are going to schedule those for April. And we actually need dates because, Shannon, how many days in April do we, what's the final day?
We have 9 meetings left in April. So we have three days coming up that are already scheduled for informational hearings. And then in April there are 9 hearing days.
And just for you out there, what Shannon and I are doing are actually going to go through each bill and put down what day we're going to hear each one. So those of you who have people from out of state coming, you've got to let us know because we're going to be putting, we have to coordinate all of this in April. And if it's a day that's not going to meet with who you want to come in, that's too bad because everybody, we can't wait for everybody to figure out when all of their people can come here because it's a logistic nightmare for our committee staff right here who has to get the calendar ready. Any comments on that? All right. I would like to open a public hearing on SCR 6. And, Avell, do you want to speak to that?
Madam Chair, I believe we have witnesses here who are prepared to come up and talk about SCR 6.
All right. Do you want to?
Mr. Pitt, Mr. Mason.
Okay. basically, this honors SCR 6. Oh, here we go. All right. Lewis, Pitt, and Tribes of Warm Spring, come on forward. And what I'd like is just very brief comments on these, just because. We want the main conversation to happen on the floor in recognizing this.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Yowen Schrick, Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And my dad was a Wasco Indian from the Cascade area, of which he spoke Kikst and other languages also, like Mrs. Thompson does and a number of elders in our tribe. The Kikst language is the language of that land from above the Dalles, Oregon, upriver towards Celilo, below Celilo, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. And the Kikst language is, I think, a very powerful language, has its own origins again in the land, and the main thing that we're trying to get across here, the message is we're down to just a very, very few speakers that fluently speak it, and it's in the world. They're the probably, as far as we know, the only 3 fluent speakers that we know of. There's a professor in Chicago, Professor Goldstein, that just teaches it as academics and certainly not fluency. So that is the gist of this, is that we're really very, very concerned. And this is one way of trying to get the Congress to focus in on the languages. Congress right now, United States Congress, is currently talks really good about this, but comes across with no money. Endangered languages, yes, we need to do something about it, native languages, but do very little as far as helping this type of situation where we have 3 individuals that need to work with mentors, work with a structure, and be funded and paid as treasures that they are. So that's the gist of this. And we're just trying to stay focused in on the language and the language only. We have rights on the river and all, I think it's been proven over the years about our rights recognized through a number of decisions. Indian Claims Commission, U.S. v. Oregon, the Gorge Act, and a lot of legal decisions that say that the Warm Springs Tribes is the authority of the area, with their Wasco people taking the lead on certain situations in that area. So again, Madam Chair, Committee, this is a bill that is putting up the red flag that says help on trying to save a very important language that is in high jeopardy of losing a lot here, and we need to do something on the short term, and this is what this says.
And I understand that you have an amendment.
I don't have an amendment, Chair. This has been our bill with the need that we have, and somebody else is proposing an amendment, and that's their call. We stay with the resolution as it is. I think that's what we're recommending.
Okay. I would like to thank you. I would like then Justin Martin to come forward. He was the one that said that there was a possible amendment that they might see, and I'd like to clarify what the concept would be.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I am here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I am also a tribal member. We feel that this bill is a very good bill and needs to be passed. However, there is some language with the history that we would like to clarify. We have spoken with the sponsor of the legislation, and we have spoken with the representatives of the Warm Springs Tribe to get that language, to get it ironed out, get this thing back to the committee, and get it out with something that both tribes can agree on in terms of history, and something that both tribes already do agree on is a wonderful bill. Thank you.
And you don't want to tell us exactly what it is in the resolution that you feel needs to be changed?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will. I passed off my copy to Mr. Mason this morning, but I've got another one here. Specifically, Madam Chair, a few lines. One, we would like Grand Ronde to be included with the tribes in the first paragraph. Two, we would like...
Okay, just question. In the first paragraph, is the Kitch language indigenous to the Grand Ronde tribe also?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. I've got information here that I could submit to the committee that would talk about the treaty with the Kalapuya, signed January 22nd, 1855.
Okay.
Maps, etc. Again, we wanted to work with Warm Springs, and Mr. Mason and I are working on that to get that language to you as soon as possible, because this is a very important piece of legislation, one that we are very supportive of.
And what was the other change?
A couple other changes. One, some deletion in that second paragraph in terms of exclusive dwellers to that area. And finally, just a more general language of Native peoples throughout the area.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I would like to, yes, Senator Gordley.
Madam Chair, as I understand it, the amendments that are being discussed would affect line 2 of the bill, line
Correct.
14 of the bill, line 23 to 24 of the bill, and line 27. And I have language here that I'll pass on to staff that clarifies.
Okay.
What that language
Well, what I'd like to do then is wait for the amendments. We may or may not include them, depending on what the Warm Springs Tribes and the Confederated Grand Ronde Tribe can come to agreement on. How does that sound?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am positive, again, in the face of this good piece of legislation, that we will be able to work with the Warm Springs Tribe and get you guys a good bill that's good for Oregon, and even better yet, to sustain a language that is looking at potentially becoming lost.
Thank you very much.
Madam
yes.
Chair, if I could say one
yes.
additional thing. I have several interns working in my office this session from Portland State University Department of Black Studies. And the interns have been reading all of the bills that I'm sponsoring this session. And looking at the file notes, one of the interns wrote, this is beautiful. This is a wonderful bill. We should do more of this, which is focused on preserving a dying legacy. just want to share that with you.
Thank you. All right. With that, I'd like to close. Any other comments? I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 6, and I'd like to open a public hearing on SCR 8. Shannon?
SCR 8 honors Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Elder Gladys Miller Thompson for her contribution to preserving Native languages in Oregon.
I assume it's Louis Pitt again.
Louis Pitt, Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Gladys Thompson is a living national monument. I'm not sure what to call her. She is a rare, I think, individual in our tribe, that she's a mentor, she's a teacher, holder of the culture, and also, again, one of our sole speakers of the Kitsch language, the Wasco language. And so, while Madeline is still here, she lost her good friend and co-teacher in the Kitsch language, the late or Atwai Madeline McInturf, last year. And so she's the sole one that we have as an active teacher. And so this is to recognize her for her wonderful life, her wonderful work that she's been doing, and her relationship to the language of our nation, and the language of the state of Oregon. So Gladys, again, is just a wonderful person. And when down the road, we hope when this makes it to the floor that Mrs. Thompson can make it here with some of her family. She's teaching her granddaughter, Deanie Johnson, the language, and keeps me on my toes with a few phrases now and then that I didn't quite hear. How do you say that again? And so they're wonderful folks that are looking forward to participating where they can down the road and ensure and encourage passage of this, in that it's, again, good for us as a tribal people, tribal nation, and definitely says a lot about Oregon and its sensitivity towards the different peoples that we have in Oregon.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right, I'd like to close public hearing on SCR 8, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 8.
Madam Chair, I'd like to thank my staff, Sean Cruz, for working with the tribe in developing the measure before us, and I move SCR 8 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves SCR 8 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. I'd like to open a public hearing on SCR 9. And yeah. Senator Gordley will carry SCR 8. Yeah.
SCR 9 urges Oregonians to commemorate Carl F. Flipper III for his achievements throughout his life.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, colleagues. For the record, I am Avelle Gordley, representing Senate District 23 in Multnomah County. And you should have before you now remarks related to Carl F. Flipper III. And, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, what I would like to do, I am mindful that I'm not just speaking to my colleagues this morning, but we have an audience that is Oregon Public Access Network. We have folks who are listening via cable, and this is a teachable moment. This is an educational opportunity. As I speak to you about Carl Flipper, who moved to Portland, Oregon in 1991, where he served at Lewis and Clark College as Director of Business Development Center and as an assistant professor of business. Mr. Flipper earned a BA in economics and an MBA in marketing and finance from the University of Illinois. He was a valuable resource to the Oregon business and education sectors, teaching business courses at Concordia University, Portland State University, and Portland Community College. From 1997 through 2000, Mr. Flipper was a trade and economic advisor for the state of Oregon, creating opportunities for cultural exchange, trade, and tourism with Africa. And he also served as a legislative assistant in my office during those years. Carl was actively involved with Oregon Public Broadcasting. He was a real champion for OPB. And the Portland Baseball Group, a real champion for baseball as well. And served as a consultant for the Oregon Native American Business and Entrepreneurial Network. Mr. Flipper was greatly involved in and enriched his community by serving as president of the Buffalo Soldiers Historical Society, president of the Oregon Enterprise Forum, president of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's Portland Chapter, and he was chair of the Troop Committee with Boy Scout Troop 10. Mr. Flipper was the great-grandson of the brother of Henry O. Flipper, the first African-American to graduate from West Point and the first African-American officer to command the Buffalo Soldiers. Carl was a longtime activist in North Portland's Humboldt neighborhood, and he passed away on November 24, 2006, from complications of multiple myeloma. SCR 9 states that we, the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly, urge all Oregonians to commemorate Carl F. Flipper III for his great achievements throughout his life as an individual who dedicated his life to the memory of his granduncle, to helping others, and to human rights. And I would say, on conclusion, that Carl Flipper was he was a dear friend, and one of the leadership qualities that he always brought forward was being present, showing up and getting the job done, and doing it with such dedication, and always with a warm embrace of all the people in the room.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. I must say that there are some wonderful role models I know in the African community, and it takes people like you to bring that to the attention of all of us, and I thank you for that.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Gordley. I want to thank Senator Gordley, too. She is a historian. That's what she does, and she reminds all of us about our history, and she stays on me about writing a book, so we've come to expect Senator Gordley as our historian to keep us all reminded of the wonderful work of these people. And so I won't keep talking on the others that she has before us, but she has a wonderful package of leaders that that have worked in our community for a long time, and I want to give you kudos, Senator Gordley, for being our historian and bringing to Oregonians and to the nation's attention these wonderful people that I personally have worked with as well. So thanks again.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 9, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 9.
Madam.
Yes, Senator Carter.
I move SCR 9 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves SCR 9 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered, and Senator Gordley will carry this bill. And I'd like to close the work session on SCR 9, and I'd like to open a public hearing on SCR 11. Senator Gordley.
Well, thank you again, Madam Chair.
Oh, and you want to explain it?
SCR 11 extends some peace to the family of Judge Clifford L. Freeman.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Multnomah County Circuit Judge Clifford L. Freeman was born in 1944 and passed away on August 21, 2006. Judge Freeman earned an undergraduate degree in economics, a master's degree in education, and a law degree from the University of Oregon, one of Oregon's own.
He served as a felony trial attorney for the Metropolitan Public Defender's Office from 1979 to 1988, and then as a pro tem juvenile court referee for Multnomah County before he was appointed to the bench in 1996. Judge Freeman was one of the driving forces behind the development of Multnomah County's community court project, and I know that Senator Carter is very familiar with the community court which operates in her district. A project that brought courtrooms into neighborhoods to handle crimes that were not considered high profile, and he was the first judge to preside over the Northeast Community Court based at the King Neighborhood Facility in Northeast Portland. As a presiding judge of the Northeast Community Court, he found ways that defendants could aid the community as part of their sentence. Judge Freeman was known to his colleagues as personifying the qualities of a good judge, a public servant, and a mentor. SCR 11 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to extend our deepest sympathies to Judge Clifford L. Freeman's family, friends, and all those persons whose lives he affected in the community he served. Judge Freeman, we grew up in the same neighborhood of North Portland, and our fathers were very close friends. They both worked on the railroad, Union Pacific Railroad, together. And Mr. Freeman was a product of a time when families worked hard to raise their families. Their goal was to get their kids to see their children through the best possible education and to get into college and to achieve and continue achieving and to continue giving back to the community. And that's what Judge Clifford Freeman was about, and so much more. And it's just an honor to bring forward this resolution honoring his accomplishments, and this just doesn't do service to the fine person that he was, and he is sorely missed by many, many, many people.
Thank you.
Just one comment.
Yes, Senator Carter.
Senator Gordon, he worked for the state as well. He worked in the governor's office for women and minorities, and for that program along as well, so he was a state employee at one point before he went to the bench as well. So he's worked both for the state and for the county as well. Thanks.
Great. Is there any further discussion? I'd like to close a public hearing on SCR 11, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 11.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Carter.
I'd like to move Senate concurrent resolution 11 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves SCR 11 to the floor with a due pass a recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Carter, or Senator Gordley, will you please carry this also? I'd like to close a work session on SCR 11, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 12. Shannon.
SCR 12, results of the 74th Legislative Assembly, will express condolences to the family of Halim Rashan.
Senator Gort.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Abdul Halim Rashan, known fondly as Halim, and formerly known as William Earl Cross, was born on May 12, 1943, and passed away on July 7, 2006. After graduating from Jefferson High School in 1961, Mr. Rashan enlisted in the United States Army and was honorably discharged. He attended Southern Illinois University and Lewis and Clark College, where he received numerous certificates and honors. Mr. Rashan began boxing at the Knott Street Community Center, where his boxing team, the Knott Street Boxing Club, won 3 national titles and was inducted into the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame in 2005. He counseled youth to stay in school and pursue higher education and motivated young people in recovery and the juvenile justice system to rebuild their lives. Mr. Rashan was a leader who stood up and fought against inferior education. In fact, he would be the first to say that he was fighting for a quality, non-racist education for all children. He fought against police brutality, unfair housing, unemployment, and he will be remembered for his singing of the Black National Anthem, "Lift Every Voice and Sing." His courage, perseverance, leadership, pride in his African heritage, and love for his community was an inspiration and example to many people, many people. SER 12 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to express our deep condolences to the family of Abdul Halim Rasan.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. Is there any further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 12, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 12.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Carter.
I'd like to move Senate concurrent resolution 12 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves SCR 12 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. Senator Gordley, would you please carry this also? And I'd like to close the work session at SCR 12, and I'd like to open a public hearing on SCR 15.
SCR 15 mourns the passing of Judge Mercedes Diaz and honors her lifelong dedication to her community and to the legal profession.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you again. Madam Chair, Judge Mercedes Diaz passed away on October 5, 2005, at the age of 87. Leaving a long legacy of service to the legal profession. Judge Diaz became the first Black female lawyer in Oregon when she was admitted to the bar in 1960, and became the first woman of color to become a judge in Oregon when she was appointed as a district court judge in 1969. Judge Diaz was elected as a Multnomah County Circuit Court judge, defeating 7 male challengers for the position. She became an advocate for youth, spending much of her time on the bench presiding over family law cases, serving on the Governor's Committee on Children and Youth and the Metropolitan Youth Commission. Judge Diaz was a founding member of the National Association for Women Judges and a founding board member of Oregon Women Lawyers, and was actively involved in the National Bar Association, the Oregon Minority Lawyers Association, and the Owen M. Panner American Inn of Court. She taught trial techniques at Harvard Law School as a Woodrow Wilson Visiting Fellow. Colleagues of Judge Mercedes Diaz state that she exemplified the qualities that make the very best lawyers: common sense, practicality, a quick wit, decisiveness, compassion, concern for the community, and an abiding love and respect of the law. SCR 15 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to mourn the passing of Judge Mercedes Diaz and to honor her lifelong dedication to her community and to the legal profession. And I would just add that Judge Diaz was a mentor, and she was also someone who had an abiding love for all people, all people. She's dearly missed.
Thank you, Sandy.
Yeah, I'd like to say something. I know the men in Oregon, whether they were Black, white, blue, yellow, or indifferent, hated this judge because she would make them own up to their responsibilities as fathers, and she would...
What a concept.
That's right. And that was not popular in the day when she first started. And... they would complain to the bar because she would say, if you're going to have babies, you have to take care of them. And she stood her ground on that issue early on. I'm talking about in the early 80s when it was not popular in court for those kind of things. This woman was just a magnificent judge, and she really supported the family.
I think Senator Carter and I would probably agree that she is among our sheroes.
Yes,
exactly. Our
sheroes.
Yes.
I like that. Thank you. Any further discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 15 and open a work session on SCR 15.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 15 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves SCR 15 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Gordley, will you please take this to the floor? I'll carry this on the floor also. I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 15 and open a public hearing on SCR 16.
SCR 16 mourns the passing of Judge Roosevelt Robinson and honors his numerous contributions to his community.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another giant, Judge Roosevelt Robinson, who passed away on August 4th, 2004. He was appointed as a Multnomah County Circuit Judge in 1995 and was one of two African Americans among Multnomah County's 37 Circuit Court judges at the time. Judge Robinson was a founding member of the Association of Oregon Black Lawyers and, as an alumnus of Lewis and Clark Law School, was a co-founder of the Lewis and Clark Law School Minority Law Students Association. Because Judge Robinson worked tirelessly to increase the numbers of minority lawyers in Oregon, a scholarship was established in his honor at his alma mater, Lewis and Clark Law School, to provide financial assistance to minority students. He acted as a mentor in countless lives, professionally, personally, and academically, especially at his alma mater, Lewis and Clark Law School. SCR 16 calls for the members of the 74th Legislative Assembly to mourn the passing of Judge Roosevelt Robinson and honor his countless contributions to his community and fellow citizens. Madam Chair, one of Judge Robinson's contributions was his work in support of drug courts. In fact, he was a champion for drug courts. One of the last times I remember seeing Judge Robinson was in this building as he was visiting with different legislators to, again, champion the cause for and talk about the success of and the positive outcomes that were being achieved with drug courts. He was a gentleman and a mentor to many young people, and the work that he did to advance getting more lawyers of color into the profession was just outstanding. We miss him. He was a giant, and all of the people that I've talked about this morning were giants and great contributors to our Oregon community.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion?
Yes. Senator Gordley, Judge Robinson was my first minister. He was a minister also. Judge Robinson.
Any other discussion? I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 16, and I'd like to open a work session on SCR 16.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I move SCR 16 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves SCR 16 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered. And please note that Senator Cruz is excused on this vote. Senator Gordley, please carry this bill also.
I will. And by way of closing, if I could just offer two things. Point of information, on April 5th, there will be a community legislative education day here in the Capitol, and we expect that we will have many, many citizens coming from Portland and other places in the state to commemorate the passage of Oregon's public accommodations law, which occurred over 50 years ago during the month of April. And during that time, on April 5th, it is our hope that we will have these resolutions on the Senate floor, and the hope is that we will have citizens in the gallery to observe, to witness the passage of these resolutions as a part of the overall commemoration of the public accommodations law in April. My other comment is an observation, and I want to share this with Senator Carter, because as we've talked about these resolutions this morning, Senator Carter has shared her remembrances of all of these people and her own insights along the way. And I just want to say again on record to Senator Carter, you must write the book. And it's so important that we all tell our stories in our own voices, those of us who are privileged to serve in this institution. Think about the book. Think about sitting down with a video recorder and talk about your service to our fine state. No one can fully appreciate what it is to serve in this institution unless we tell our stories. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Carley. Like, how do you are you in opposition to this SCR 16? We've already voted.
No.
Okay, so we're all unanimous. Okay, I'd like to close the work session on SCR 16. And before we move on to Senate Bill 717, I want to state that Senator Gourley and Senator Carter have been extremely strong advocates for all minorities. And I personally was appalled when down in Eugene during the tournaments that there were racist epithets thrown out at the students from Roosevelt High School. And I feel that we're in a dark ages when I read things like that in the paper. And I'm not sure what the answer is. I feel that racism still exists when things like this happen. And I just want the public to know that there is a lot of work that we need to do to stop discrimination in this beautiful state of ours. And I just needed to put that because you brought to light all of the wonderful people and the good work that is already done by minorities. Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I just... Yes. To that end, this is the first time that Roosevelt High School in 20-some-odd years has performed at the level that they've performed. And I think it says something about Portland School District and Portland's community in terms of the support that our kids, you know, are getting. I am just so proud as a senator in that district that our kids did not respond to that. But I want to say this to all Oregonians who are members of the major race, that good people like yourselves must stand up and say something. You cannot keep your white gloves on and act as if it didn't happen. That's why stuff like this continues, because people of great conscience sit down, sit back, and say nothing. So I am so proud to be a member of your committee, Madam Chair, that you bring this statement that you're bringing here this morning. Because too many times, Senator Gourley and I feel alone in this fight. And I know that there are very wonderful Oregonians who happens to be of the major race in this state who don't support this stuff, but you don't say nothing. And so people think it's okay to be racist and to make racial epithets of that nature because all the good folk like yourselves are not saying nothing. I have a problem with that. This is not a black issue. This is a societal issue, and good white people in this state must stand up and say, I don't support that. So, Madam Chair, you got me on my... I didn't want to say anything, but I am so proud of you. I am so proud to be a member of your committee that you could say that this morning, and thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator Carter.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 717.
And Shannon.
707-17 requires the Board of Medical Examiners to appoint a Scope of Practice Review Committee for regulated health professions when requested to review proposed changes to Scope of Practice healthcare professions. And it requires the committee to report the results to the board and to forward committee report and the board's position on the committee recommendations to the legislature and the governor.
Thank you. I'm State Senator Lori Moss Anderson, representing Senate District 25, Gresham, Wood Village, Troutdale, and Fairview. Senate Bill 717 was a concept that a number of legislators have been talking about, saying that scope of practice issues are becoming so complicated and that many legislators feel that there needs to be a review committee that deals with this before it actually comes back to the legislature. A lot of it has to do with education, training, skills, and what has turned it out, many legislators have said, it's the relationship I have with the lobbyist rather than voting truly on the merits of whether the policy is good or not. And so this is the beginning attempt to look at a review committee that can take all of the problems or the concerns or issues regarding various scope of practices. And the lobby's very good because I have received almost 100 emails in opposition to this, and I know that there are certain lobbyists that are even in this room that have orchestrated that, saying because they would like the status quo. There are other lobbyists who have come to me and said this is very good. The intent is not, the idea of having it under the Board of Medical Examiners, they say, is a question. Why should the Board of... Well, first let me explain the bill. Basically, what happens is that if an industry, I'll call it, a medical profession, wants a proposed change to their scope, what they will do is they will fill out a request, submit it to the Board of Medical Examiners. Within 30 days, the Board of Medical Examiners will appoint two members, one of whom will be appointed by the Health Profession Regulatory Board of the profession to which the scope of practice applies, and one that is actually appointed by the organization representing the profession. Then there are two members appointed who oppose the proposed change, and then there are two neutral members appointed. And then what happens is that committee within, I believe it's 3 months, I think it's 90 days, yes, need to come up with a recommendation. And that will be made the final recommendation. The report shall include a recommendation for endorsement or rejection of the proposed change. And if the committee fails to reach consensus, the report will identify the issues that resulted in the failure to reach consensus. The Board of Medical Examiners will provide the technical assistance and the support staff, and then the Board of Medical Examiners shall forward the committee's report and the board's position to the Legislative Assembly to provide input so that we are better informed and better educated as to what decision needs to be made regarding this. And this problem is only going to increase only because we are expanding. The health industry is growing. It is the fastest growing industry in this state. And there are more and more of us that actually need to have scopes of practices expanded. We truly need a lot of different people providing services. Yet, who are we to say one profession is is skilled enough to do that. We have the ophthalmologist versus the optometrist. We have the occupational therapist versus the speech therapist. We have the chiropractors versus the physicians. We have the physical therapist. We have the massage therapist. And we truly need to make an unbiased decision on this. And so that is why this bill has come forward, and I think we're going to hear a lot of pro for it, and we're going to hear a lot of con for it. And with that, I would like to close my statements.
Any questions for Senator Montana? Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I've presided over a lot of scope of practice issues in my time in the building, and I thought we always came to pretty good resolution of those issues. We've done a lot of expansion, and you've been a part of that. And I guess I'm just trying to understand how setting up another bureaucratic thing is going to further inform us as to the decisions we make. Because quite honestly, we look at when we look at an expansion of scope of practice. I mean, for me, it's always been the first key component is appropriate access to health care, but the other one has always been, does their training warrant that expansion? And we're still going to have that, aren't we? And so I'm not quite sure how this really helps us get to that point, because we're still going to have all the advocacies once we get in the building that we did have.
I think the legislature, thank you, Senator Cruz, I think the legislature will be better informed if we actually have the two parties meeting together before the request comes. Right now, the request just goes straight mm-hmm. through a legislator to legislative council, and without any dialogue between the professions. And we truly need to have the professions getting together before a draft actually goes into LC. It's not going to prevent a draft from going to LC, but I think the legislature will definitely be able to make a better informed decision if we knew if there is just more study done on this between the two parties. One that's for it and one that's against it.
You seem to be arguing for a more structured, formal process as opposed to an ad hoc approach.
Yes.
Senator Carter.
Thank you for bringing this legislation. Since 1985, I've been concerned about this and never did anything about it myself, so thank you for bringing it forward, because I think that there has to be another way. It definitely has to have some kind of means by which people with knowledge from academia, the university systems who set up programs, people from the varied professions, must be much more accountable in terms of this, because I have seen this being nothing more than an economic issue. And it's not always health care. It's economics. And it's variances in institutional practices. And so it's not as unmeaningful as some people might think. And I don't think that you can put it to the point of, any of us can put it to the point of just lobbyists being able to have opportunity. So I think there must be another way. I'm just wondering, Senator, if you, since the Board of Medical Examiners is a regulatory agency, I'm wondering if some people might not be taking opposition to that as an issue, and if also the board might not be as have as much discreet as maybe people would want to have discreetness. As people wanted to have in terms of the appointment, if that could become a political piece. And I was just wondering if maybe some of the people that are coming forward will be able to speak to that and offer some suggestions about who should be the appointing body. Should it be the governor? Should it be another authority? What it might be, I don't know. And I'm just passing on conversation in terms of this, because I really have thought about this since the 80s. When I came here, my first session was doing nothing but scope of practice issues in this committee. So there is a need for something else out here, but what it is, I don't know. And maybe some of the smart minds that's going to be coming before us might be having some suggestions about what should be done. I certainly am open to listening, but I know the status quo does not work, and I'm not for the status quo.
Thank you, Senator Carter. You're absolutely right. Having the medical board, because this actually, the scope of practice actually comes under their jurisdiction, and they'll speak to that. I just felt automatically, okay, that is the appropriate place. There have been other suggestions. One is actually having the at Oregon Health Sciences University, they have an evidence-based, I don't know if it's an evidence-based department or how you call it, but they say, well, maybe they would, but the people that are in charge of that have not gotten back to me. But that will be a key issue that I think needs to be discussed. We need to hear from the stakeholders what will work, what doesn't work. But I take a look at MLAC, and MLAC has the unions on one side and the management on the other side, and has evidently truly worked very, very well. And I would love to have something like that regarding dealing with scope of practices. With that, I think we should hear what the proponents and opponents have to say.
Thank you for this legislation.
Okay, let's call John McCauley. Let's have Kathleen Haley come first, since she actually represents the Board of Medical Examiners. Oh, I'm sorry. Kathleen, Dr. Lacey needs to leave at 9:30 to see patients. Is it possible for him to testify first? I just read this note.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Lacey. I'm a pediatrician. I represent the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Pediatric Society. And I'm here, basically, I guess, as the bill is written, I guess we would be opposed to it. And we've talked about this before. This is these issues, as you pointed out, have come up numerous times, and I've been involved with numerous groups of people who are looking for expanded privileges. And I think, politically speaking, this is, you know, from our opinion, the Board of Medical Examiner may be a hard sell to all the groups who are not underneath that umbrella, as you pointed out. And I'm not sure what group or what agency there is. And we would propose that we come up with a task force to look into this, something that would be politically sellable to all the groups that are involved, not feel like we have to rush in and make a big change right now, and then come back to the next session and say, okay, here's what we proposed, or an interim, something that that everybody could buy off on, so that nobody feels they're being left out. Just knowing how things work, and we would like to have all the power, of course, but that's not going to be a thing that would work for everybody in the state. And we recognize that there are other people that and groups of practitioners who do deliver, you know, medical services of varying kinds, and that we want to make sure that they have fair representation.
Thank you. Comments?
I'm just glad the doctor offered some solution. It's not okay to me for a big association like the Medical Association, doctor, to just say you disagree. You guys got to help resolve this problem. because it is a problem.
Well, we agree 100%. Like I said, I've been involved with, as Senator Cruz has been, and you've been involved too, mm-hmm. in numerous bills that have come through and putting you in the position of right. telling other people you can do it, you can't do it. Like you pointed out, it comes down to who's your friend, who's powerful, who's got access. And I've seen numerous situations that have come up just because of that don't, to me, always make sense.
Right.
So, and we've talked about this. I don't know who would be that. And that's why I think we're not selling off on it. We're not just saying, oh, don't worry about it. What we're saying is let's appoint an interim task force. We're happy to be part of that and look into that. I just want to make sure that we have adequate representation from all the different fields that are there. If you give me the power, I'll be happy to wield it. If you give it to the BME, I'm sure they would take it on and do it. I just would be worried that all the people who aren't represented would feel left out or somehow they didn't get a fair shake out of the deal.
Right.
So.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and thank you for taking time to be here this morning. Does your organization have further thoughts around your recommendation for an interim task force, further thoughts about the makeup of a task force and their charge?
We can get back to you on that. We're going to actually have a meeting on Thursday night, and we'd be happy to put together what looks like a reasonable task force to come back to that. But we've only been talking back and forth without having, you know, actual solutions for this problem.
Okay. Other comments? Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lacey, very much. Okay, now Kathleen Haley.
Good morning, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Medical Examiners. Thank you very much for bringing this important issue of deciding scope of practice issues for healthcare professionals forward. The Board recognizes that this is a thorny and very time-consuming issue for you all. The Board currently has general responsibility for the practice of medicine and podiatry in the state of Oregon. The other charge to the Board is to protect the citizens of the state. To that end, on a regular basis, the Board does review scope of practice issues. For example, the idea of when podiatric physicians would be able to operate on the ankle.
Excuse me.
The Board was involved in a lengthy task force to decide that issue. On a regular basis, physicians come forward and ask for suggestions to scope of practice. Those are reviewed by a committee and then forwarded to the full Board for decision making. While there was an anesthesiologist serving on the Board supported nurse anesthetists in their desire to practice more independently. I think that the timeline set forward and the criteria in this bill in Section 3A would provide for an unbiased medical review that could then be forwarded to the legislature. In some ways, I think of it as like a mediation before a court case, that you don't immediately go to the court. Sometimes you have to have an interim step, and you get more information out that way, and also a give and take. So while the Board did not seek this responsibility, it would be more than happy to undertake the task if that's your desire, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you.
Good morning.
How do other states handle this challenge?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Gordley, it's my understanding that many of them are in the same position that you all are, in that these issues are coming forward directly to the legislature.
Do we know, though, if there are any states who made some advancements toward correcting what we're defining as a problem? Have we looked for states that may be further along?
Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Gordley, no, but I do have a sort of a chat room that I could poll my peers and find out if anyone's got any other ideas.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. perhaps you can answer this one. The National Conference of State Legislatures, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
Doing some research for us. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you. I remember well the battle between the podiatrists and orthopedists that went on forever, I think. and you were instrumental in helping us resolve that, but those are two disciplines under that are currently under you. I guess my concern is for those disciplines that are not under you, how all of that meshes together, and I think there's really some concern there, and as Dr. Lace mentioned, there's a comfort level that may or may not exist with having the BME as oversight over disciplines outside of your shop, basically, and I think that's something, Madam Chair, we need to be mindful of as we move forward. Personally, from my perspective, when we're dealing with scope of practice issues, I want the facts. You know, unvarnished facts. I'm not sure that necessarily the best lobbyist or the most powerful group necessarily wins. When I look at our expansion of scope of practice for nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, the Oregon Medical Association wasn't really thrilled about that, and they're a pretty big lobby group, but we went ahead and did it because it was in the best interest of healthcare. So when I was objecting, Madam Chair, to the structure here, it was more of concern, not necessarily the objective you're after, but to see if we're doing it the appropriate way.
What would it be possible for you to make a list of those that are under you, and where are the physical therapists? Where are the occupational therapists? Where are all of those other jurisdictions?
Chair Mona Sanderson, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
With that, I would like to call John McCulley.
Well, Mr. McCulley is coming, Madam Chair.
Yes.
But I think what is very great here is that this board has not turned anything down, but said that it would want to be a fair and objective group if the legislature so deems that necessary. Mm-hmm. And I do think that they could be.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the way in which we go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John McCulley. I'm here representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. Here really to speak in favor of this bill, although it might be improved in some ways, we sure like the concept that's embodied here. I think you probably know for the last three sessions we've been engaged in scope of practice discussions with the psychologist regarding prescription privileges. And it seems that we don't talk during the interim between sessions to see if there is common ground. We each build up our war chests.
That's right.
I write out letters for our PAC, and then during the session we try to get more money to come down here and lobby you all. And I'm not sure that's the best way to accomplish getting our position across. So I like the idea of a neutral body, if you will, getting to the facts. Often those facts are distorted in the heat of the battle here, and I think it would be very valuable to have the practitioners on each side with a neutral group to get together and see if there is a better way, to see if there are solutions. I think this is a great concept, and certainly hope that you pursue it aggressively.
Thank you. Any comments?
Yes,
yes,
Chair. A couple of comments. What improvements would you make?
Well, I think the question was raised, what happens when you have practitioners whose licensing board is not the Board of Medical Examiners? For example, I also represent the speech pathologists who have their own licensing board, and of course they had an issue with one of the bills before your committee earlier in the session.
Mm-hmm.
We accomplished a resolution 5 minutes in the hallway after the hearing, but having that done prior to the hearing would have sure made it or prior to the session would have solved that. So maybe there is a way when a profession is not licensed under the BME to either have them advise the BME more directly, or maybe the two boards at issue get together and accomplish this.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair,
yes.
This testimony, and actually all the testimony we've been hearing on the measure and the measure itself, just makes the argument again, I think, for why it's important to have all the health licensing boards in a policy committee, mm-hmm. one policy committee, like the Health Policy and Public Affairs Committee, so that we get away from the fragmented mm-hmm. looking and approaches to doing the public policy piece. We still have an opportunity to look at how we do that, how we can do that in this session, and I would strongly encourage us to do that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay.
Thank you.
Martin Taylor.
Chair Monsanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. And it's not that you're not hearing me well, my voice is kind of going out, so I apologize for that. Feels a little odd to be talking about scopes of practice, which in the considering the hearing that you had this morning seemed pretty trivial to some of the inspiring conversation that you've had. But I do think that in this building a great deal of time and energy is put into these issues, and it's very worthy to take a look at how that's done as a process. A little light bulb went off over my head. I didn't have a real good feel of where this bill came from, what this bill was about, and it came into our bill stack a little later, and my boss, Susan King, who would normally be here, only she's in D.C., was the point person on it and hadn't had a chance to talk to Senator Monsanderson about the bill. So there's a national dialogue that's really been instigated by the membership of the American Medical Association to review all scopes of practice everywhere, and it has felt very threatening on a national level to a lot of other organizations that feel like it's sort of doctors coming in and trying to set everything right because it's gotten so disjointed. And of course, if you're on the other side of everything right, that's kind of threatening. So there was an expectation that this bill had some more nefarious efforts. Although I have to say, the representatives of this building from the Oregon Medical Association were very upfront with us and said that this wasn't their bill, but we still hadn't sort of narrowed it down. And in some ways, that's very telling of the reason that you've got this bill, that there is, and it's just not just in the state, it's all over the country, that scopes provoke very parochial reactions from the people who live in those professions. And I've worked in that environment here for some time, not actually having a scope of my own. I mean, Capital Club, but, I'm not a healthcare provider. I do represent healthcare providers in this building, and I recognize just how seriously and emotionally people take the discussions about what they are and aren't capable of doing, and these are not normal policy discussions. These are ones where people have a hard time stepping back and getting some distance from the issue. It also makes vesting these authorities with the Board of Medical Examiners problematic. It truly does. It's not that it's good. The Board of Medical Examiners does an excellent job. They're a very classy professional board. It's not an indictment on the board. It really wouldn't matter what board you chose. If you give any one group a gatekeeper function over the other groups, it will be a very radioactive discussion, and it has a good chance over time of creating a political disbalance between those groups. It also would necessitate that one group being able to be less parochial than everybody that they're now a gatekeeper over. And that's just not the history that we have in this process. And I'm not picking on doctors or OMA. It wouldn't be the history if you were talking about giving all this authority to the Board of Nursing either. But that's not how these folks have operated. I think that the analogy that was used, like MLAC, is actually a pretty helpful analogy. It is a group that is an external advisory group, but you as legislators, and in the case of MLAC, the governor, give it the weight of a policy-bearing group. You don't have to listen to anything MLAC says if you don't want to. You choose to. It's there for you. It's not there for the folks that are MLAC members even. They really are there to create some balance. But some observations with that model. The first observation is that MLAC has had a very chilling effect on any expansion in the workers' comp system. Any group that you create as advisory will probably slow the expansion of scopes because it'll just be one more step that someone who wanted to expand a scope would have to go through. I think that may be something that you are seeking, but I definitely think that from the perspective of an organization that's passed, what, 5 scope expansions in the last 5 sessions, you know, we're on the other side of that. We think that what nursing has to offer can be done more affordably, more accessibly in some areas and some conditions. And, you know, the session we don't have a bill like that, we've kind of come to a place where we feel like we've done what we wanted to do in that area. But I think that it's maybe telling of other professions as well that you will slow down the rate in which you have new groups accelerate their entry into different settings if you have a second step in this process. And any group of healthcare providers you get together are likely to take a more parochial role. That's just my observation.
Mr. Taylor, Martin, in the bill it states that if an association would have to make an application and the response has to be within 30 days, mm-hmm. that group meets and then has to have a report within 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of time between session to session, so a lot of this work could be done during interim.
I think the time frames are fine. I'm not sure I'd put it in the Board of Medical Examiners, but I think you could put together an advisory group to this legislature and operate on those time functions. And I think that you can get quality people to serve. One of my other observations is that you've had a lot of folks who know this process through their own scopes who are, in fact, legislators, and not all of them are still serving. But if you just took existing legislators, then you have a physician, a nurse, a psychologist, a dentist, and I might be forgetting someone, I apologize if I am, serving now, and all the folks who have recently served. I mean, one of the disadvantages to the proposal, to some extent, is that you're bringing people to the table who are, in fact, stakeholders and there to represent a group's parochial interests. In some ways, as lawmakers, particularly lawmakers who have scopes, who understand the difference between these professions, you have a little bit more distance and you have a little bit more ability to say, well, I know I'm a nurse, but I'm also a lawmaker and I have a constituency, and I've got a little better perspective on the difference between what's just good for nurses and what's good for the state. I'm not sure that the group you're seeking wouldn't be a little bit more distant, in fact, from these boards and these professional associations and a little bit more able to take that.
Well, like what Senator Cruz says, we need the facts.
Yeah.
And the facts that have come to us, sometimes you cannot differentiate what will make good policy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we have to have vetted outside, where they can look at the education of, like, a nurse anesthetist, and then those of anesthetists, and look at what would make good policy. And in that case, of course, you know, the Board of Medical Examiners actually were in favor. In fact, I remember the letter that we had with the governor, and we had to send it to the feds, I think, to get permission to have nurses anesthetists be on a par with anesthetists. So, in a sense, that had to take place outside of the legislature to try to get those things done.
Yeah. Well, if I can respond, Chair. I think that, you know, one of the things that's been said is that there's so much of this that's driven by financial interests or just who has better political friends in this process. And I'd say that that's a little bit too black and white, that there is a lot of work that happens between sessions, between the professional boards and between professional associations. I think a lot more of that goes on than people realize. And I think a lot of these decisions have both a component of you know, financial interest and a component of a healthcare interest, and that one of the things that you're able to balance out, frankly, better than the folks in the process is where your constituents are telling you, look, to us it's valuable to go to a nurse practitioner because, you know, in the town of Merlin, that's the only person we've got. That there is a way to have the public involved in this dialogue, but they're having that involvement through you. They're very likely to have it through the board or through a professional association. But I think it's a little too black and white to think that the decisions all come down to the financial interest. A lot of it come down to your constituent concerns and what professional associations are choosing to do between sessions to try to sort these things out. I don't envy you. I mean, I think you've got a very difficult job of trying to sort through information that is sometimes going to be contradictory, and sometimes there's not a simple right answer. Sometimes either system is going to produce different results, but, you know, they're not. It's not like you've got a terrible choice and a good choice. It's shades of which direction you want things to go, which is more important to you at any given time. And that ultimately is more the responsibility of a lawmaker than a professional association to figure out.
Well, the intent of this bill was not to create a new bureaucracy. We were trying to look at an entity that already existed and then have a subcommittee, because these scope of practice issues can be done within 90 days, truly. They can address it and come out with recommendations. So having a... How do you respond to that, having a task force? Let's forget your concerns regarding the Board of Medical Examiners, but having a task force or an interim committee that's in existence for only 90 days addressing the facts, getting both sides together.
I think having a process prior to session where scope of practice bills are vetted by an interim committee is a good idea. I think that you should accept that it's likely to slow down expansions of scope because it'll create an extra step in the process. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but you just should have your eyes open that that's one of the likely outcomes. And that anything you do is still going to be very political and parochial because it's the nature of this right now. But I do think it's a good idea, and I think the speed is actually a good idea, too, that most of this information is available. It's a question of getting it to you in a timely way and giving you a chance to sort it out and a deliberative process in the front end.
Well, I tend to disagree with you in that it would slow down the process, because in my eyes I wanted to speed up the process so that when you come to the legislature with a recommendation, all of that work had been done prior to the legislative session. And you're saying you don't think that that's possible.
Chairman Sanderson, I think it will speed up your deliberative process. I think in terms of expansions of scope, it will slow down expansions of scope because you'll have to clear two steps, that one and then the step in the legislative process. It's the same thing that MLAC has a cooling effect on changes to workers' comp or the, you know, before insurance mandates are passed in this process, we've adopted a process of pre-screening insurance mandates. It's cooled the expansion of insurance mandates. We do things in this legislative process, think deliberately to slow down change sometimes, but I think you will have that effect. You will likely slow down change.
Well, I look at change. What I am looking at is good policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if it has to be more deliberative, mm-hmm. good policy shouldn't be made willy-nilly, and that's, you know, I would think, though, that in most cases it would speed up the process, but maybe there are some where it would slow it down, but we'd have to see. Okay, other comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tracy Redden.
Good morning, Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association, and you'll notice I'm Martin Neutral on the sign-in sheet. We have looked at this issue. We haven't taken a formal position for or against this this particular.
Did you identify yourself?
For the record, my name is Tracy Breton, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. Again, you know, we've looked at this issue. The initial reactions were mixed, I would say that. And I think that, in general, though, the concept was supported by many of the members of our association who did look at it. I think that the actual particulars of the bill and the way that that plays out were where the concerns were lying at that time. I think that we, as an association, have felt the frustrations of the scope of practice issues, too, as I'm sure all have. And we would, you know... Well, we as an association absolutely attempt to contact the interested parties when we do change our scope of practice. Unfortunately, that does not always happen. There's been a lot of issues that have come forward, even in this session, that we would have absolutely been very happy to have known about, or at least had the opportunity to discuss with interested parties. And when we talk about expansion of scope, I understand that, but we are also talking about changes in scope of practice that might take away from another scope. And that's something that we've had to face. And for us, that's, you know, especially if it's an unwarranted conversation, that's not good for the public. And those types of issues, I think, are critical to be vetted before the legislative session occurs. So we do support the concept. I'm not sure we do. We're licensed under the Oregon Physical Therapist Licensing Board. I think the idea of an interim committee, perhaps, is a good one, something that would just bring together maybe something more in the form of an ad hoc committee. But I do think the concept of getting these issues on the table prior to the session is a good one, and we support that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that was the last of it. Now that I've heard the pros and cons, what I would like, and I'm going to direct it sort of to Kathleen Healy. I want to have all of the boards, a meeting with all the heads of the boards, just preliminary. I need to understand better who's under each board. And I was wondering if you could work through Shannon in getting a meeting set up for me, and any members of the committee that want to attend can. I heard a couple of times a task force. I think that first I'd like to have the meeting with all of the boards, not just those boards underneath the Board of Medical Examiners. And I don't know what those other boards are, so I assume. But you'll be able to help me with that, correct? Okay. All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Courtney?
Yeah, I haven't said anything up to now because I wanted to listen. Just for the record, I owe this to my fellow senators. Senator Lori Morris and I have talked about this for some time, and I'm very pleased with what she's brought forward because Senator Carter said she's been here since 85. I've been here since 1981 with the exception of two sessions. And I cannot tell you that I know decisions I made on scope of practice were right. I made scope of practice decisions on just about every health care professional, whatever the phrase that should be used, imaginable. And I don't know to this day if I did it right or wrong. I don't. And I don't because I've not spent a single day in med school. I think I took one class in biology. I listened as hard as I could to individuals who got up and made very compelling arguments that the scope of practice should be expanded, and very compelling arguments that it shouldn't be expanded. And to me, it was a coin toss. It was simply a coin toss. And, you know, the bottom line in the area, my grandmother once said to me, if you have your health, that's the most important thing you can have. And because I believe so much in that, and because of the serious medical problems I've had, the bottom line has to be patient care. Because that patient, when they come to see somebody, they're hurting. And they rely on us who make the laws to say that the person you're seeing has the necessary experience, knowledge, and training to get the job done. And in that area, I am very frustrated because the competition now among healthcare professionals, whatever the phrase should be used, Senator Monson, is so great. The issues of access are brought up all the time, but what good does it do to create greater access? But when the individual goes in the door sees someone, they don't have the necessary training or experience or knowledge. So this thing goes on and on and on. And I want to congratulate the chair. Is this the perfect model? I don't know. And the fact, and I'm not, and you brought up other states, and I think it's a good point, Senator Gourley. I've almost reached the point, though, if Oregon was the first state to try something like this, we shouldn't be afraid to. Now, I'm going to listen hard. There's some great arguments made that said this should be this, it should be that. But right now, I don't think that most legislators are equipped to make a decision on these scope of practice issues. Not when you're dealing with my eye, and I've had four surgeries there. Not when you're dealing with another body part, which I'm not going to describe with you, and I had radical surgery there. Not when you're dealing with my mental processes, and I've had psychiatrists like versus psychologists. That is heavy stuff. And I realize that we make decisions on other things we don't have a lot of experience in, but when it's as serious as health care, I think we should get all the help we can get, if no other reason, to get the unvarnished truth and the unvarnished facts that good Senator Cruz referred to. And all this is an attempt to really help equip legislators to make decisions what, in the bottom line, would be is the best interest of that man or woman or that child who's going in to see somebody because they're hurting. So I thank you for that. And I think it's a gutsy move. It's a good faith attempt. There's nothing nefarious about this. There's nothing sinister about this. This didn't come from any political action committee. I will tell you, it probably came from a conversation Senator Lori Monson Anderson and I had. It's as simple as that. You can hate me for that, but that's it.
Nobody lobbied me for this, no PAC, no lobbyist or anything else. It's this very simple, plain fact what we're trying to do here. Will we get there? I don't know. But I will tell you, I think we can do it better than we're doing it. I will say that. That's my experience in life and my experience as a politician, as a legislator. Thank you for at least letting me. I think I owed that to you, Senator Cruz, Senator Carter, Senator Monahan, and Senator Val Gordley, and to the public, since I've been sitting here so quietly listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think any of the scope of practice decisions we have made during our decade here have been arbitrary or capricious, but they haven't been easy, and they have been as informed as we could possibly make them. Having said that, I was thinking where would the appropriate authority, because we're looking for a convener is what we're looking for. Where would the appropriate authority be? Would it maybe be with some entity like the Health Service Commission or some entity we already have that is independent of all of these boards and commissions, and because what we're looking for is somebody with the ability to convene a group, and I just thought I'd throw that out there as a possibility.
Thank you. Wonderful. This is the start. And this next meeting that I'd like to have with the boards, I want them to take a look if all of the boards could come forward with what other states do regarding state scopes of practice. It could be that they do it exactly like we do right now, but that would be the gist to dialogue on process in other states. And if you are interested in coming to that type of meeting, just contact Shannon. I'd like to have that set up within the next couple of weeks, if that would be possible. All right. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 717. And starting on Wednesday, we are going to be dealing with some mental health issues. The citing will be on Wednesday and how it was cited, and we're going to have that conversation. And then the next two sessions next week, committee meetings, we'll be talking about community health. With that, the meeting's adjourned.